This recording is being made on May the 1st, 1975. We are talking to Mrs. Daisy Bruni. Mrs. Bruni, is that Bruni?
I.E.
I.E. And your husband's name?
William.
William. And do you want to give me your maiden name as well?
Dunn.
Done.
D-U-N-N.
Were you born in Alliance?
No, I was born in Conway, Pennsylvania.
How long have you been in Alliance?
Well, we moved here when I was about 4 years old. So it's quite a long time.
It's been a while. We
I
are
bet you.
talking to Mrs. Bruni as a former employee of the Ohio Bell Telephone Company. And Mrs. Bruni began there, when was it?
In March of 1930.
1930, and you retired from the company?
In 73, July of 73.
Mrs. Bruni, you retired in 1973. How many years was that with Ohio Bell?
That was 43 years.
That's a
That's a
marvelous
long
record of
time,
service.
but it was a good, they were good years. I really enjoyed them.
And you began in 1930.
That's right.
And was it Ohio Bell at that
It
time?
was Ohio Bell. I was the first one hired after the Depression.
Oh my.
And things were not very brisk at that time. I do remember at one time they asked the girls if they would wish to work 4 days in order not to lay anyone off, and they voted to do that. So at one time we did work 4 days. That's the only time I remember we ever did that.
Yes, those must have been times when they weren't doing very much hiring, or was this just at
Very
the
little.
period where they were
It was
beginning to swing
just
back?
coming out of the Depression.
Wonderful.
Was very, very hard to get a job.
And in 1930, what requirements did they have for a telephone operator at that time?
Well, at that time, you didn't even have to be a high school graduate. That was not a requirement. Your reach had, of course, they tested you for voice. You had to pass physical tests for reaching and voice, and of course you had to pass the doctor's physical.
What would they have tested in your voice? Your diction?
Just
Your
as you spoke clearly and were not had a lot of what shall I say, that you ran words together and talked too fast or
In other
too
words, that
abruptly or
someone could understand what you were saying. And
That's
what
right.
about the reach that they tested for? What did you have to be able to reach?
You had to be able to reach either side of the board. I mean, if you had cords, you had to be able
Reach
to
the
reach that you I can't picture a very small person, although there were no requirements for height or anything of that kind, but you really had to have a good reach.
So you would have to be able to reach the length of the cord
That's right.
that you would have for plugging into your board.
And your
And
boards, I don't remember exactly the length of the boards, but you had to be able to reach the length of your board to disconnect and pick up signals and so forth.
Good. And were these the only requirements? Then there was no high school diploma required. Why was this?
There was no, well, at that time, rules were not as strict as they are now about having a high school diploma. If you met the requirements and they felt that you were going to be an asset to the company and a good employee, then you were hired.
And you were hired with or without the college or the high school diploma.
Right.
Could it have been that at that time there were not that many who were graduated from high
Well,
school?
I think that's very true. I don't think the emphasis was placed on education as it is now. I think at that time it was more or less placed on skills.
The ability to do the job.
If you were going to be they felt a dedicated employee or someone they were going to be proud of having in the company, then and of course you are trained every day. Even when I left, you're still being trained, and there's always new things coming along, and you're trained every day on something that is coming along, or studies were taken, and you're evaluated every month to get a progress report. All through the years, it's not someone thinks that you step in and just sit down and that it's a breeze. It isn't. It's really very thorough training.
And continuous training
Continuous
then.
training. We have the they call the Bible a telephone company, very thick training books, you know.
Did
And
they
you were
have?
trained, excuse me.
Go ahead.
I went to Canton to train, and at that time the streetcars were still running in Alliance. And I went to Canton on a streetcar.
And did you do this on company time for
You were
your
paid,
training?
yes.
You were paid.
You were paid company time.
So before you actually started your operator work, you went to Canton and received your
Went to
training.
Canton for training.
And then when you were beginning in 1930, how many operators did Alliance have, do you recall?
No, I don't remember exactly, although we did have over 100 at 100 operators, and that's hard to believe. You know, nobody
100
that. That's
operators
right.
in Alliance, in
In
the office
Alliance.
here in Alliance.
Not when I began, of course. Times were slow then. But we did have, and we had quite a number on Arch Street, too, when we went up to Arch Street.
When you started in 1930, where was the telephone office
At the corner of
located?
Arch and Main.
Arch and Main, which corner
That
there?
is where the, that would be on the, what, northeast corner, wouldn't it?
Northeast would be
That's
where
where the dress shop
Penrod's.
is now.
Penrod's.
No, wait, I don't mean Arch and Main. I'm wrong. Arch and,
Okay.
what's the next street over there? Arch and,
Dear.
Oh, where the bowling alley is, you know, down from the bowling alley. And the
Oh,
review.
yes.
Linden.
Linden
Arch and
Street.
Linden.
I see. Okay, and that then would have been the southeast corner, where Elizabeth's dress shop is right now.
Yeah, is that south or north?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's north.
It must be north,
You're right,
northeast,
it's
right.
north.
And the commercial was on the ground floor, and the operators were on the second floor.
So they occupied two floors of that
Well,
building.
three floors, actually. Then
Three
the
floors.
mechanics of the business, all the work that the men did were on the third floor there.
The equipment.
So we had the whole building.
Three floors. And is that building substantially the same now, except for the fact that it has the dress shop in it and other
I
things in
don't
it?
know now what is upstairs or whether they use it for storage or what it is. There's no, of course, no telephone equipment there for years since we moved to Arch Street.
And at that time that the office would have been on the corner of Arch and Linden, was also the office at Arch on up Arch Street near Milner, was that in existence too?
No, that was brand new.
I see.
After they decided to put that office in, that was supposed to be the most modern office in the state. Now you can see it's been obsolete, you know.
Yes, because the technology with Ohio
That's
Bell
right.
has continued to grow.
That's right.
Well, let's go back to being a telephone operator in 1930. How many days did you train in Canton? Do you remember
Three
how long?
weeks.
3 weeks
Three
to learn
weeks.
the, mostly to learn the
And
equipment,
then
I would
afterward, the
suppose.
girls trained 5 weeks.
Later on, as equipment maybe
Five
got more
weeks.
complex, they trained 5 weeks. Do you know how long they train now?
No, I'm not sure how many days they put in now. It isn't that
It
long,
wouldn't be that
no.
long now because the equipment probably is not that.
Well, it's more sophisticated and it's so much quicker. You just can't picture the way we used to do things. The way, and then we had the old county boards, we had the county lines where you rang R and J, pulled a button and rang so many rings, and for the county people. That was at the front part of the office, it was a whole separate board than the long distance boards.
Let's try and give a picture as well as we can in talking about it of what your board looked like in 1930. As a telephone operator, you sat in front of a long board. There were several other operators sitting there with you.
Oh yes, we had a number. In fact, the boards were pretty full. They varied according to time of day and business requirements. And of course, the county boards were all resident calls. The majority of them were resident calls. They were at the top of the board, had a reach.
Yes.
And then you had a key to pull back for a certain number of rings, whatever they asked for. You would connect them with that and pull your key back and ring your RJ, one long, two short, whatever they had asked for.
These would be county calls, would be the calls that you would be placing outside the city limits of Alliance,
Yes,
would
it would
that
be
be it?
rural now, like now you would consider probably townships or things of that kind.
So then at
Rural.
that point, if you wanted to call someone in Marlboro, it was considered probably a county line and operated at the top of the board. So we had a board with
Well,
different
actually,
lines in
I'm
it.
sorry, Marlboro
Sure.
was not considered our county. Now, our county was just Alliance Rural.
Oh.
Marlboro wasn't taken into that In fact, Marlboro was separate. And a lot of these small places had their own operators for years and years.
Oh, I
You know,
see.
there's a girl living in Atwater now, who worked at the Alliance office, but who formerly operated the Atwater board. So they all had their own separate operators, Homeworth, Damascus. In fact, we got to be quite good friends with some of these people just over the line, you know?
Just in talking to
but
them.
But they all, at that time, were small separate offices of their own.
Well, let's just see in the immediate area. Then you mentioned Marlboro had a board with telephone operators.
Right.
And
Atwater
had one.
North Benton.
North Benton.
Damascus. Homeworth.
Sebring.
Sebring.
Let's see. Really, was there anything in Washington Township? Or
that wouldn't have come into Alliance and into our county.
Did it... What about Limaville? Did we mention Limaville?
Limaville would have been our rural, probably, because they had no operator.
I see. Well, that must have been quite a time for a telephone operator.
Right.
You certainly would have had
You were necessary.
Indeed, you were. Oh.
And you did get to know some of the people, and they would get to know you by voice. And they were, most of them were very pleasant.
To get along with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How about your other equipment? At that time, did you wear a headset of some sort?
Always. Always wear a headset.
Was it a pretty large one at that time?
They varied. When we started, we had, it sounds odd now, we had the headset. We also had a horn in the front.
That was the
shaped
speaker
like a
for
horn.
The phone.
It was a speaker. And we also wore a band around the neck to hold the headset on. When times were slow and the girls wanted to get away from the board, we would go out and wash those and sterilize them. That had to be done every week.
And this was something that was your responsibility as a telephone operator?
We did it because we wanted to be busy. Really.
At times when the board
we
was
would
wet.
Ask, well, can we do this, you know? Because sometimes it was quite slow. Like, I mean, this was done like on Saturday afternoon, like a weekend.
How much of the day did you have to cover as a telephone operator? In other words, you evidently had different shifts. How many different shifts were there?
Well, now they would start in the morning at 6. And there would be a trick come in at 7. They would have 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And then when you got into the 10 o'clock, they would probably be a split shift where you work morning, and then maybe you'd work 10 to 1 and come back and work 5 to 10.
Oh.
Whatever your seniority, wherever your seniority fits you in, that's where you were required to work, because you didn't bump somebody until you had the service.
So those who had the greatest seniority would be placed in the
More desirable
hours
if you wanted them. However, if because of family commitments or maybe your husband was working a different job or different hours, if you wanted to work evenings, then that was your priority because you would have the service. You could hold those hours.
What would happen in the evening? For instance, the latest someone worked was 10 o'clock?
No, I worked for years from 5 to 11.
Until
for many
11.
Years, 20-some years I worked those hours. And I really liked those hours because we're not recording now. Well, it doesn't matter. Because my husband worked days and I was home with our boy, and we worked, and then I worked the evening shift. So that between us it worked out real well.
Yes.
But I would go in now for many years until the union won these shorter hours for us because of the lateness. We worked the longer trick, like we would go in at 4 and work until 11. So that after we had won some things on the job that we wanted, then it was changed to 5 to 11, which wasn't bad at all because we got a half hour for lunch and we were paid for 8 hours, plus a differential for evenings. Because they were not desirable for
Indeed
the younger
not.
People because of dating and so forth.
And would this have been every evening if you worked from 5 till 11, or did your schedule change each day?
No, whatever you wanted. I worked it all the time, and I liked it very much. And it took me about 10 minutes to get to work and that long to get home, and it was really nice for me. But if the girls wanted to trade hours with another operator, and they had an okay from the chief, then you could trade. Suppose you had something coming up or an appointment or something, and you wanted to trade. If that was agreeable with the other girl, then you were permitted to trade, as long as you got an okay on it.
What happened to telephone service after 11 o'clock at night?
After 11 o'clock, they were required to keep... Well, now, when I first started, there was only one girl worked all night in the Alliance office, one girl. And then after a while, due to our union contracts, they were required to work two people on the all night. But the one girl worked worked alone, and she worked it for many, many years. She's still in the Alliance. I worked it for 1 month many years ago when she was off, but that's all I worked it. But then at night, you had the night traffic, which wasn't very heavy, and you had all the ticket work to do. The tickets had to be counted and separated and so forth, ready to go in the mail.
These tickets would be your billing.
That our billing
method
tickets.
Of billing for the different
calls. At that
calls.
Time, we wrote everything. We wrote, they were about this size, and we wrote the point of destination and the Alliance number, if it was a person or station call. Certain marks were put on the ticket.
Now, would this be for something that was considered long distance only? In other words, if it was just a local call?
Only long distance.
These would be long distance, and these tickets were probably, what, about 3x5 cards?
Oh, something like that. Very easy to handle. And every report that we got on a call had to be written. You were required to put every report on, like we had certain abbreviations. Like if you asked for Mr. Jones and he was not expected until 2 o'clock, he would put you 2 o'clock.
Oh my.
And the time you got the report. Anything following that you would also write in. Everything was written.
I would imagine the telephone company appreciated people who had good handwriting at that point too.
Well, that's true. You really appreciated another girl if you, like we had certain boards who handled delayed calls. We called them TX positions at that time. And there was one girl that handled nothing. But delayed calls.
In other words, the telephone operator took the responsibility for replacing these calls if the call didn't go through.
That's right.
And now it's up to the individual to dial it himself.
That's right.
If it doesn't go through.
If Mr. Jones was expected at 2 o'clock, then it went up the board. We had clips on the board, and it went up, was passed up to this one girl who worked the TX position. And these, they were all filed according to time. And when it came 2 o'clock, you had to try that call for Mr. Jones.
Was the customer billed only when the call went through?
At that time, we were they were charged what they called a report charge, which varied 15 to 25 cents or 35, depending on the distance. They were charged a report charge for you having worked on the call.
Yes, because it could have taken several tries
That's
for the
right.
operator to get that call
but
through.
But later that was done away with. There was no report charges on calls. And then when we had emergency calls, a girl could work for hours on an emergency call, locating someone, you know, really an emergency. And that was really when you were able to locate someone, say it was in case of death or accident or something of that kind, you really felt as though you had accomplished something, you know.
At that time, too, with all of the conversation you would have had in completing the call, most likely you did have more contact with the public than a telephone
yes.
operator today.
And that's what made it so interesting. That those were the years to me to have worked. As it is now, of course, we went up there and we had to learn a whole new way of operating. We had the key system where as fast as you could key the number before we dialed like everyone else, you know. And we were taught to hold your hand a certain way and your pencil a certain way and dial a certain way. And believe me, you did it too.
I think the telephone company has always been known for excellent supervision. In other words, the rules that were set down, someone was there to see that they were
well,
kept and that
that's
the standards
right.
were kept.
And as it was always drilled into us, all you have to sell is service. That is all you have to sell. And, of course, we were trained on voice and being pleasant to people, and you didn't cut people off. I mean, in the middle of a sentence if they were talking or, you know, courtesy.
Yes.
And that's why I think that we worked in the years when it was really enjoyable because you had that contact with people.
Then your equipment changed. You mentioned from having to dial the calls. Each operator would have had her own dial to dial calls. It went to a key system where you would key in the numbers for the telephone. How is it now? Probably
Now
touch.
they have console boards. And girls say it's quite boring now. You work the calls feed into you, you work the console boards. Even your rates are computed at the top of your key shelf. At the top of the shelf, the amount is computed, the minutes, everything. There's really very little that that you have to do in comparison to what we used to do.
It just isn't quite as challenging as it used to
No,
be in the
it
days when
isn't
you
the
did it.
challenge. I don't think, and I didn't work the console boards, but I know I have a lot of friends that are still going to Canton, and a lot of them had to are getting their pension age maybe within 5 or 10 years, so they went over to numbers service, which is information in Canton, in order to get their years in, and
Quite bored.
they're not real happy with it. No, I mean, that's why I feel, and we all feel, that we worked when it was the personal contact was so much more enjoyable.
But it would have been a much more challenging and probably interesting because of the
It
greater
was.
contact with the
And you were
patron.
busy all the time. I mean, you can see where the machinery has done away with all the work we used to do. Like we used to challenge for circuits if we were going, and we used different forms of speech. Like we'd have an MX call, which was a multi-switch call through maybe three or four operators, like if you were going to the south or north or way out west. Now you key 213 for California and the number, and you're there, where we had to go through maybe Cleveland, Chicago, and maybe four operators to get to Los Angeles.
In other words, the operator had to call, let's say, Chicago, and then in turn, Chicago would put you through to Omaha or
We would
something.
pass it as MX, which meant many switches.
So many different operators were involved in getting a
That's
call from
right.
Alliance to California.
That's right. And it was quite challenging, and at times, particularly during the holidays when we wanted to get calls through, we had to give our filing times. So they challenge your filing time. What's your filing time? And you'd say 121. Well, whether or not hers was 122, she could say 119, so you had to release the circuit if you met another operator on that circuit.
He who got there
So
first
there
got
was
the circuit.
a lot of things going on that maybe weren't quite according to Hoyle, but if you got the earliest filing time, then you got the circuit. You had to challenge your times.
Were mentioning that in filing time and talking about having to give the filing time being the difference between one operator being able to complete her call if she had the earliest filing time. And you were saying that this occurred at a time when you were probably not supervised, not being supervised.
You hoped you weren't.
If you happened to give the earlier time and it hadn't really been the
If you
earlier
gave an
time.
incorrect filing time, of course, that's was against your, I mean, you should give, because you put that on your ticket immediately when you take the call, your number, your filing time.
And your filing time being the time that you actually started that call.
That's
So that
right.
would determine which operator got on that line
That's right.
first. And of course, if the switchboard was doing a heavy business, it would sometimes be tempting to say an earlier filing time in order to get the call
Oh
through.
yes, many times.
But of course, you're mentioning that if you had a supervisor nearby, this couldn't be done.
Well, it wasn't accepted practice, no, but I think everyone did it.
And you would usually have a supervisor in the room with you
Oh, you always had a supervisor.
on each shift.
It was a supervisor for every so many girls, say 7 or 8 girls, there was a supervisor. And then you had, now not when I started, you had a clerk who took care of the records. You had a chief operator. You had assistant chief operators. So your supervisor would answer to the assistant chief, and then she in turn to the chief operator. And records were kept. Your studies were taken on you, and everything is marked down. And
As
they could
to.
observe from the end of the board, or the chief could observe from certain positions.
So you could really never be sure exactly when someone was
That's
listening
right,
to
you
your
couldn't.
call and supervising. And was there any indication on the line to your
You
ear
could
that
never
it was
hear.
being You could not.
No, you could not hear. I think occasionally you could maybe hear a click, but if you were busy, no, no way could you hear that. But I mean, if it was quiet. And now, like, the Arch Street office got so that there were, oh, maybe at night were fewer and fewer people. Of course, you knew when someone was in with you, was taking a study, you know. But you were very well observed, so that you did the proper job. You didn't get by with anything.
Kind of kept you on your toes, huh? When did the equipment begin to change? You'd mentioned when you started out, you had the horn that you wore on the chest and the headpiece.
Headpiece. And the band around the
and
neck.
And the band around the neck. And when did this equipment start to change?
Oh, we had that for many years. I can't tell you exactly the year when it changed, but then we went to all in one piece, the headset, and then the mouthpiece was on one. And when we were up at Arch Street, we were supposed to get these tiny little ones that you see them use on radio now.
Yes,
on TV.
It doesn't really have a
mouthpiece
on it. It's just
little,
a little tube that
right.
runs in front of the mouth.
But I think because of the fact they were going to change so soon, that never materialized.
When did you move to Arch Street? Do you remember when you moved from the...
You know, I can't tell you the exact year. I'm trying to pinpoint that. I can't think of the exact year.
Was it a change in duties, or did they close this office down on Linden
and
Arch?
You had a choice. You could stay down here, what they called the cutover, when they cut the office here over and everything was picked up on Arch Street. You had a choice of staying down here or going to the new office. And believe me, when we learned the new system up there, it really was... It was hard. It was like learning our own new system again.
Because you had new equipment?
We had new equipment. Everything was new. When we went up there, we had the ticket tubes. So that we used to have a girl go along down in the Alliance office and collect the tickets. And she would work the rate desk. And she also had the route and rate books up there. So that when you needed a route to some distant city, wherever, you would plug in. It would throw a light in her on her desk, and she would have to get out these books according to states and find out what your routing was.
So your routing would be the different cities you would have to go through to reach
That's
this
right.
far-off city.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I would imagine you knew all the routes to the cities you called
well,
most of the time.
You knew a lot of them. However, if you would get out in some small place where it was a tributary, a small office, then not always did you know. You know, you would have to ask or... But operators were always very helpful. You ask, say you went down around Columbiana, down in there to some of the small places like Sebring was part of Sebring, used to be known as Thelma City.
Thelma City.
Thelma City.
Thelma.
The East Alliance. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people never heard of Thelma City. So you'd have to get an operator who was familiar with these points and who could tell you, you know,
how
what
to,
they were.
To get to Thelma City.
That's
by
right.
Means
and
of
who
other...
rang it? In other words, what city rang those numbers? Like Washingtonville.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people would know where Washingtonville is. And if Washingtonville was not listed in the directory and the routing instructions, then you had to go to, say, Laetona or Lisbon or, and find out who actually rang those numbers. You know?
Yes, and so this lady with the route books would be very important.
Yes, and she also collected the tickets, and when she wasn't giving routes and rates, she put the minutes on the tickets. They have clocks on the back, and you would put the minutes, and also you would have to rate those tickets.
How did this change then when you moved up to Arch Street?
Well, when we went to Arch Street, then they had a new system of tubes beside your board, so that when you were through the ticket, they were a little different size. You folded up the bottom and flipped them in the tube, and they just shot across to the other side of the room where we had information at that time. And so the girls over there did information and had to do the ticket work too.
Would this have been a pneumatic tube? It would have been an air tube. But you didn't have to put it in a container. You just folded the ticket and put it into.
Had to be folded a certain way, and it just shot right over there.
Through the tube. Oh, that did shape things quite a bit.
We used to have some little funny gals when I wasn't busy would draw pictures and so on and so forth and send things over, you know.
Oh, I would imagine there were opportunities for humor in a lot of the situations in the telephone.
But, and then up there we had the keying, of course, which was much, much faster.
So by that time, the equipment was beginning to get
Oh,
more
yes, it was much more
sophisticated. And
modernized. In fact, that was a much modern office in the state when it was built.
you suppose that would have been around the 50s, in the 1950s, that that office was built on Arch Street? I think we
I
can
would.
look that up and insert that.
I really am not positive of the year. I should know that too. I'm trying to connect it with something, but I'm really not positive of that.
Well, when you went to the Arch Street office, now this is the office again at Arch and Milner, isn't it? Am I using the right street up there? How many operators were there up there? By this point, had the number of operators decreased because of
Yes, the number
the
had decreased because of the way the work was handled and so much more speed.
newer equipment
And then,
did.
of course, customers were encouraged to place their own calls, you remember, to dial. And we got the phrases, I'd be glad to place your call, but you can dial it cheaper yourself, you know. And it was just educating the public to new ways of doing things, that's all.
Even as they're still educating them to dial their own long
That's
distance
right. Person
calls.
calls, credit cards.
Well, when did the patron's ability to dial come into the system? When were they able to dial? Do you recall that?
No, I can't give you the year on that either,
Well, we can check
when
that
that was
too. When they would
available.
have put their dialing system, did you find that many were reluctant to change?
At first, I think some were anxious to, but I think some of the older people, maybe, or people who were handicapped or something, were, of course, anyone who had difficulty, we were always more than glad to do it. In fact, we were instructed to do it. We were supposed to do it. But of course, they would have to notify us in some way, and we did have a list of people who were blind and so on and so forth. And if they would just give their name, and we had the list, and we did it for them, you know.
The operator would place
Yeah.
the call then if it was someone
But
that was handicapped.
it was just so much faster. There was no comparison. And then, of course, as I say, we went along. The tricks were shortened.
And by trick, you mean your work
Your
shift.
work shift. I'm talking telephone.
This had a whole telephone company had a whole language of its
That's
own,
right,
didn't they?
really.
Plus abbreviations of their own
Abbreviations.
too. Yes. Your shifts then would have shortened. How about actually routing then a long distance call? Did your route shorten at this time when you moved to your new equipment?
Well, it was faster. You didn't go through so many offices. And in fact, there was all this electrical switching, you know, so that you dialed. Like we used to meet operators along the way, that was all done away with, unless you had to go to an office for information. But it got to be so centralized, like information is now in Canton. Our route and rate at that time was in Cleveland, and it got to be after certain hours that our plant department, our repair was in Youngstown after 5 o'clock in the evening. All reports were taken in Youngstown. So it was gradually a centralization of everything was
Yes.
compacted.
And still, this centralization is continuing because we, of course,
Yes.
experienced this year the phasing out of telephone operators in
That's right.
Alliance. So that this opportunity to work as a telephone operator will only be available to those people who want to go to Canton to be a telephone operator.
Well, yes, and of course they close out their cord boards over there. Now they just have the console, and they are going to Akron.
Eventually, then
Eventually, they'll
that
be in
operation
Akron.
will
There'll be
be in Akron.
no operators in Canton. Of course, that numbers, which is information, will be is centralized, and they carry quite a few people. And our girls that are still working, of course, most of them are able to hold the same hours. They took the same hours that I work. A group of us worked, you know, together, the older girls. And so that's what they're working now. They're old enough to have bumped the Canton operators and, you know, the ones that they had the service. So they drive together, most of them.
And have the same
Four or
shift
five.
then. How did the requirements for a telephone operator change over the years? Once you went to your key equipment, you no longer had to worry about the reach, did you? Was that done
You
away
still
with?
had two of your cords. We still had cords plug in. You still had your signals appear on the board, and you had your front cord and your back cord to make a pair.
And you still would have
And
had
you
to
still
reach.
had to, you still had to reach.
And that still was a requirement at the time you retired then?
Well, I think that they weren't quite so fussy as they were at the beginning, but you still, and you had to be fast. You're allowed so many seconds for everything. You were timed according to seconds.
And did they check the voice again? Do they still look for?
Well, I think it's a requirement. Of course, we're getting a lot of other nationalities and people that are in, you know, coming into the system.
And at one time, most likely, they would not have had that opportunity.
No, that's right. They were required after a while to take so many colored and so many, you know,
other ethnic groups.
Nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a surprise to a lot of people when they would encounter a colored person on the line at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there was resentment. Sometimes people would hang up.
Oh, really?
Really. And
yeah.
But if the operator was pleasant and, you know, there was no trouble.
Most people would not have had that
most
resentment.
Most people are very,
yes.
Very pleasant. You always had a few that you would get their call up fast, you know.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some experiences that may have occurred. You had mentioned, well, I guess you didn't mention it, but I was thinking, was there ever a time when you had a fire in any of your equipment? Was there ever a danger of overheating some of the equipment in the earlier days?
Not that I recall in our office here. We've had emergency situations when we worked by gaslight downtown. And of course, then we had no air conditioning. We had fans.
And I would imagine
and
it was quite warm.
The tickets would blow. So they were held down with everything. Of course, we had little clips along the top of the board where you could
clip
put your tickets in.
Too.
But they were mainly for tickets that were to go to the TX position for later work, or like the girl that picked up the tickets then would also pick those up and distribute them wherever they were supposed to go.
Was the equipment rather warm in those early days before you had air conditioning when you only
had
fans?
It was warm to work, really. It was really warm. And like I say, when you put the fans on, and no one was ever satisfied it was too warm or too hot, and it still was after we had air conditioning. No one was ever satisfied. It was either sweaters or, you know, put
yes.
the windows up, put the windows down, you know.
Even with air conditioning, though,
right.
That problem hasn't
mm-hmm.
been solved, has it? People
right.
are still uncomfortable.
Oh, we had lots of times that we worked overtime when they were emergency conditions, like when that Warner Mill burned. You probably don't remember that. It was a big fire, and it was a big feed store, you know, down on Prospect and down in that area.
Warner's Mill,
mm-hmm.
and it burned.
Uh-huh.
Now, why would this have necessitated the operators working overtime?
Well, whenever there's anything happens of that nature, people always call. The board lights up. Where's the fire?
They would call the operator
yeah,
to find
oh,
out.
Right,
so
right.
you were sort of a source of community
right.
information.
Well, where's the fire? And of course, the operator is the first one. Most people call in an emergency. My husband can't breathe. Get me an ambulance, or I need a doctor, or this has happened, or that has happened, and. Of course, if they wanted the fire department, we had to connect with the fire department. If they didn't ring them, we had numbers, you know, and had to get them to stay on the line because we had to get the addresses and so forth, you know, and try to keep some of those people on the line, and they were hysterical at times, you know. Or call the police in case of accident, and we had a lot of emergency calls, really.
I think it's very interesting, though, that people would call just to get the information of what was happening in an emergency from the operator, who would...
Oh, that was very normal. And we used to have children call in and ask for problems on homework. Do you know what this is? What's the answer to this?
I trust you referred them to the public library.
Oh, we had a lot of really unusual things happen through the years. And when I was talking to you before, I called this girl that we worked with. We had so many little funny things happen that people would say, or would really just laugh, you know. And she made a book of these, wrote them down. So I called her and I said, Mary, do you still have that book? I said, people might be interested, you know, in some of the things that happened. She said, oh, I just threw it away. She said, there's just the two of us. And I thought, why should I keep all this? And some of them were just
Isn't
priceless.
that
They were so funny,
sad?
you know,
Oh,
really funny.
that's a shame. It would have been interesting to go through and
Oh,
read
it
that
was
book.
really, we really, and everyone say, oh, Mary, here's one for your book, you know.
To write it down.
Just funny things, you know, that happened.
Anything that comes to mind as you would be thinking about it?
Oh, I don't know. Things happened every day, you know, that were just surprising.
I think in working with the public, you often run into human interest stories.
That's
That's
right,
what they are.
very much so.
Do you find, or did you find before you retired in 1973, that people had the tendency to call the operator for information as to what was going on in an emergency?
Not so much as earlier. I think people move with the times. And I think that with radio and television, and I think it was more, well, facts were there, you know. Although locally they still would. And sometimes I wonder now, we used to have other operators or people who would call and ask for locations of shops or buildings or stores or I had an occasion one time. I remember Bill, I want to say Kraling, that wasn't his name. He was a radio, with radio in Canton. And he called in one night and said he had lost his wallet in a Cleveland pay station. And he said, I was making a call and I laid it down. And he said, I've come off without it. And he'd gotten clear home. He said, do you think there's any way you could help me? Now, this was many years ago. And I called an operator in Cleveland and explained the situation. And she happened to be familiar with that area. And do you know that man got his wallet back and he wrote a letter to the company. And they came in and showed me that. I kept that for many years. Thanking us for finding his wallet, you know.
Oh, that's
He got
amazing.
His wallet back and he worked at a radio station in Canton. But I mean, lots of things happen like that, you know.
That's just amazing to be able to have found that wall.
But I mean, that's such a good feeling to think that you can do that, you know, for
yes,
someone.
Yes, I'm sure.
Of course, had she
been.
Not known the area, then if I'd gotten another operator, she probably never would have known where there's a pay station. And this was an outside pay station.
How did it happen the man from Canton called the Alliance operator?
He lived in Alliance.
Oh, I see.
He lived in Alliance. His family is still here. I don't know where he is now, but he was with the Canton Radio for many years.
We think that was Bill Crayley?
I'm not. I know his. They were related to his sister. They were related to the Maloneys in Alliance through his sister somehow. I want to say Crayley. I'm not positive his last name. It's been so long ago.
That certainly was service above and beyond the call of duty, wasn't it?
Well, he was nice enough to write a very nice letter.
Certainly. I'm sure he appreciated very much getting
but
his wallet back.
But he said, even in this day of communication, he said, it still amazes me. So, you know, there's things you appreciate in you. But, I mean, we would work on a call like that. You can see how much time that would take, you know. Or now you can key a call and it's gone and done. Where, and those days you would work on something like that. Well, by no means now would an operator probably take the time to do anything like that.
Again, with the faster equipment and the equipment doing it, the operators just don't have that much contact
no.
with one another.
Or that much time.
And that much time, true.
But we worked for hours and hours, not only one girl, but several girls, and trying to locate in case of death for families for many, many hours, a whole evening trying to find someone who was en route somewhere and get the highway patrol, the state patrol, and, you know, licenses and have cars stopped and things of that kind. That happened many times.
Wow.
So it was rewarding in a way that when you went in, you never knew what that day was going to bring or what kind of a challenge and, you know.
Well, the operator at that time would have felt she was doing so much more.
You felt necessary. I don't know now that you feel that way because the girls say, well, it's a job. you know, you don't have contact with people.
Yes.
That way.
Amazing.
Oh, so many things happened. I wish I could remember a lot of them, but every day was something, you know.
How about the way you would dress for your job when you started in the 30s? Would you have found the casual appearance tolerated that one would have today?
No slacks.
No slacks.
It was many years before slacks were permitted.
Even though an operator had no contact visually with the public, did she?
No. Although they did have tours. They call them tours.
We were talking about the rules that they had in the early days about not wearing slacks, and we asked why this would be so when the girls were usually not seen by the public, and you were explaining this was because you did have tours coming through. Who would come
through
the telephone office?
It wasn't only for that reason. It was for the fact that it was just not considered ladylike.
At that
time, not good business, really.
Yes.
Not good business appearance. To wear slacks, and it was many years before they won through arbitration and so forth that they won the right, and then they were coming in almost shorts, and you know, and there was nothing thought about it at all.
It kind of parallels business dress in any
right.
business operation, I know,
and
for many
times.
Years. Yes, and the trend of clothes and the greater casual approach to it rather than a firm, business-like
That's right.
approach.
But we used to have Boy Scouts, tours would come through, and certain groups, clubs, and anyone that was interested would, you know, watch you operate, and someone would be designated, usually some management person to take them through on tours and explain things to them.
Probably you gained a number of telephone operators through those tours, girls
well,
who would have been impressed.
I'm surprised.
Speaking of girls, in the early period of telephone operator work, did you ever have any men working the board as
no,
an operator?
Only when we were on strike. I guess it was very laughable then. If we were out on strike, you know, then they would bring management people in.
And so the men would, even in the 30s?
Some of the men would work the boards.
I see. Now, in the time that you worked for the telephone company, do you recall ever any male operators in Alliance?
No,
men were telephone operators. Do you know of any in the system now?
Yes, I have some
Canton?
Information in Canton. In fact, our paper came out not too long ago, News in Brief, it's called. And they have some young men working information. And they have had telephone operators. And can't end in larger offices because they can't discriminate if they want the job.
No, this is true.
They
this
must
is
hire
true.
Them.
One
and
wonders
some
if.
Some seem to like it, really.
Mm-hmm. About security over the years, you mentioned in the 30s you would have one operator,
right.
one woman working all night.
Right.
She was alone in the office.
That's right.
And probably
there
never
was
thought
no one else
a thing
working.
About it. No one else.
Well, no, because it was accepted, although I think a lot of girls would not have done so, but. This particular girl that worked it for so many years, in fact, I thought maybe Harry might have asked her because she was a little older than I, but she worked it for many, many, many years alone. And we had a button on the door. There was a long flight of stairs that we used to go in. We also had a back entrance down there near where the bowling alley is. But we used that front entrance, and we had a button, certain rings that we rang to get in, And then, of course, when we get up on Arch Street, you had to announce yourself. You had to give your name before they would release the door so that you could open that door.
Yes, and on Arch Street, you had a foyer, in other words,
That's
you
right.
went into, and then there was a locked door,
mm-hmm.
and you had to say who you were
oh,
before
yes,
they would
very,
open the door.
And in the larger offices in Canton, you have to show your pass. You can't get in. They have, of course, men guards over there, and you can't get in without your pass.
Of course, security over the years during this period has changed quite a bit.
Quite a bit during the war years, and now they were very strict, you know, very, very strict about passes and things of that kind. We used to have a lot of kids up there in Arch Street, you know, and try to get in. You could always get in that outside door, but when you got inside, you know, then, you know, I used to monkey
Yeah, I
around.
imagine it was a place to come in and look around
Right.
and test the
They had the
equipment and
telephones,
things.
you know, on the outside there,
Yes, in
a
that
telephone
foyer you had
display.
a display case showing all the telephone
But I think
equipment.
sometimes they want to come in and get warm or something in the wintertime.
Well, and a lot of times for children it's curiosity, you
That's
know, they
right.
have to come in and inspect the
Yeah.
area.
Of course, that's as far as they got. They never got beyond the second door.
Did they actually understand about operating the telephone to announce themselves? Did they try
Well,
that?
they could reach the phone, you know, it was right above the, or right alongside the door. They could reach the phone. And of course, you could talk, you know, you say, we would say name and number so that you have your own special number. And you'd have to give your name and your number to get in. And you could always tell a child or, you know, someone younger.
Well, they wouldn't have a number either, would they?
No, of course. But, oh, we had a lot of that. We had a lot of things with kids that were funnier, you know. But most of them are pretty nice. And we go around on Happy New Year and all that bit, you know. And
Oh,
Merry
Christmas
Christmas, and
time.
who got the first Merry Christmas, you know. And people were really nice then.
Did they do anything special as you were operators around the Christmas season? Would you get a lot of Christmas greetings as you?
You mean the company or the public?
Both for the.
Well, now, many years ago when things were more personal, we used to get quite a few gifts.
Oh.
Sent in, not particularly from people, although if you had, there were many instances where if you'd done a particularly good job for someone or had located someone or been particularly helpful, that had a lot of instances where the girls got roses, got flowers, and occasionally $5 in an envelope or something like that.
Oh, I think
And
that's.
then the companies used to send us very nice gifts Christmas time. And then I got so it was candy mostly, you know. But all the firms, most of them used to send very nice things.
And of course, that was at the time when there was a lot more personal involvement in
That's
the
right.
Operation of the telephone switchboard.
And you know, if you felt someone felt that you had done a particularly gone out of your way, it was nice, even if they just called in and said, well, if they wanted to thank, they didn't know what your you were never allowed to give your name. You had to give your number if you were asked for it. But you were never permitted to give your name.
So that if someone sent a bouquet of flowers, they would send it to the number
To the number.
rather than the name. Yes, well, this
Never your
was
name was given out.
for protection, I'm
Right.
sure. I'm sure.
Oh, a lot of things happen.
I doubt that very many operators get roses these days again
I
because
don't think so, because I don't think you have the contact,
the
you
lack
know,
of the personal
with
contact.
people. But we used to have a lot of nice things happen. And many, many very good friendships. When you work that way and, you know, you sit this close to people as we are now, you get to know people's family situations and their, you know, just all about them. And you really make very good friendships for the
And of
years.
course, you work sometimes as a team, even though you had
That's
your own
right.
individual section of the board. You did teamwork, and I think, too, you worked under pressure at times.
Oh, yes. Well, I would say a lot of times you worked under pressure because we were given so many seconds to answer. We had these machines in the back where our calls were, that's the way they computed our number of people that were required for a business day and by the number of calls that came in, actually hourly, and how many were slow in being answered. And they computed your timing, and your office is given a rating, and over your area, and it's quite. You're given 10 seconds to answer a call. You're given so many seconds after you pick up a person's call to get it on its way, and if you're not, you're charged with slow operating, and you're really timed.
So rather than counting the number of times the lights flashed, or the did you actually have your calls ringing in? Were there buzzers?
We had a night bell. I doubt very much if they have them in the larger offices. I don't know. But we had a night bell up here for the night people, say when there were two people on at night, and one girl would be taking her rest period, like she would get maybe 3 hours at night to sleep, and the other girl would be in. Of course, they're not that busy at night. However, if you had an emergency of some kind, and you would call that girl to come back, you know.
I see. But actually, the timing on answering a call was by seconds rather
by
than the number of
seconds,
rings.
because we were always taught that next call may be an emergency.
It's true.
You
it
know,
could have been.
You get a flashing light on there, you know, it would just flash on and off. That may be an emergency that, you know, get that. It wasn't only that particular call, but get all the calls, you know. 10 seconds you're allowed. However, we did have really busy times, though, and maybe they hadn't quite figured the amount of people or something unusual had happened in the area when more people were required, but you didn't have them. Maybe they called them in well and signals would stand. And I think during the, or towards the end, when I don't think they're quite as fussy, when they knew they were going, you know, and the system was closing out and we were going
to Canton.
To Canton, and everything was so fast, and there wasn't near the dedication, nearly the dedication that we were, it was really drilled into us from the minute we started.
Days. I think, too, they were probably concerned because you begin to wonder, you know, where the operator is if she isn't answering
the
call.
It's very irritating, I would think, because I've called from home at night, you know, after I'd gotten home or something, and, you know, and say, gee, you must be busy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, as the day progresses and the operators are less and less, you know, because the business is not, you don't require that many.
Yes.
And then if you get a certain, well, suppose you would have a fire, or suppose you'd have a really bad storm or something, you know, and then a lot of lines are out. A lot of people are calling the Ohio Edison or something of that kind, you know. Then you're really busy, you know.
At the time when the operator still had to handle
That's
these local
right.
calls, that would have been a tremendous
mm-hmm.
amount. And how about when telephone service lines would be down in the winter because of the snow, too?
Well, those people are just, until the men can get out and make repairs, you know. It's just, well, like this last storm we had, you know, this spring or early this year. We had a lot of course, I wasn't working then, but a lot of people called me, how can I get help, you know, that knew I'd worked there. You know, how can I get in? And, well, and I'd call and say, well, so-and-so is, well, they knew Bill was township, and they'd say, well, we have to get, will you tell them that our road's cleared? Can they get the crew out here for the Ohio Edison, you know, and telling them they've cleared the roads and so forth. Well, then I'd call in, and they'd say, well, they're taking them in groups because, the Ohio Edison was, you know, take so many calls, and, you know.
They were swamped
yeah,
in that
really.
Particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned things that would light up the board, in other words, that would cause a lot of calls. You mentioned a fire,
mm-hmm.
where people would want to know
mm-hmm.
where the fire was, if the a storm had come through,
mm-hmm.
and
or if there was a tornado watch.
Oh,
or
really?
Anything of that kind. Uh-huh.
What kind of information would they want in a tornado watch?
Well, if they hadn't had the radio or something, suppose, do you remember when that tornado hit down around Paris, down below here a few
yes.
years ago? Things of that kind. We had a lot of calls at that time, you know.
And they would
requests.
Call the operator,
mm-hmm.
and they'd want to know
mm-hmm.
what the
where
situation.
Where it had hit, or how bad it was, or, well, even just before I left, operator, where's the fire? And if they knew a fire, well, where's the fire? Well, we couldn't tell them where the fire was, you know.
Certainly.
Things of that kind.
Operator was quite a source of information other than telephone numbers, wasn't
in past
she?
Years, yeah. The telephone operator was a necessary part of the, very necessary part of the community.
What else would make the switchboard light up? Anything else? How about during the war? Were there special problems then?
Well, yes, I'm trying to think of some. I don't know. We were just awfully busy then with a lot of calls. Tremendous, a lot of camp calls. It took so much time. Those camp calls took forever.
You mean someone in a family calling their son at camp?
Trying to
or
locate
their
son,
husband.
And maybe they had called repeatedly, and they would say, well, they're out in the field, they're here, they're there, they're somewhere else, and leave word for them to call, and they didn't call by a certain time. Well, then you had to keep calling and trying to get a report. And well, then maybe someone had given you wrong information, and they came back finally and say, oh, they've got a weekend pass or something, you know, after all.
So probably during World War II, your long distance calls must have increased tremendously
We
with
were
people
busy,
calling the
right?
camps.
We were busy. Even the later years, you know, when the boys were in camps and Korean conflict and Vietnam and all that, it was. We still had all those camp calls.
How about making telephone calls overseas? When were you able to do this in Alliance?
Well, we always could call overseas. However, it would depend on the location where it was routed. Like overseas to New York, would either go to New York or go to the West Coast. So we would have to pass those calls to an overseas operator. Connect our cut. At first, we used to get all the information and pass it to her, and then later we just connected the customer to the overseas operator, and
So
she
if
handled it.
I see. So if someone called in to make a call, let's say to Germany, you'd most likely route that through New York,
Through New York,
and you'd simply connected your customer with the New York, and she
That
took care of routing it.
you connect her with well, you went to your routing instructions and found out who handled it, and then and you dialed it through and asked for operator 243 overseas or whatever her number was, connected the customer directly, and she took their calls. Or like it was to the Far East or somewhere, most likely it was San Francisco or someplace.
Interesting.
Oh, there's so many things happened through the years. I wish I could pinpoint a lot of them, you know, but each day was something different.
I think we've covered quite a bit of history of the telephone company in our talk. Certainly, I think some insights into it that many people might not have thought about, and those who don't remember having to have an operator place their calls, they were calling in the city of Alliance, I think missed an exciting period in telephone history.
Well, I think so too. And then I think working evenings, as a lot of us did, a lot of the older girls took the night shift because they were shorter hours and maybe they had children or something and it worked out better for them. And then we got a different type of call. We didn't get the business calls primarily because the men or had their PBX operators, they could just give the information in a flash and it was through. But in the evening when you got the calls from residents, from people who were unable to dial or who needed help or who were a little hesitant about calling, then we got those calls, and to me they were much more interesting.
Probably a little more human interest added to
Right.
that rather than the business calls that
Because the
were.
businessmen knew exactly what they wanted and it was just through, you know, there was no, they knew exactly what they wanted or their PBX girls placed them, and of course we got to know all them very well, you know, and maybe chat a minute or two when you're waiting, but that was frowned upon. I mean, it was all business, you know, later on particularly.
I can imagine. Well, I think it's been an interesting tape and an interesting story of being a telephone
Well,
operator for.
I hope so. I wish I could have thought of probably when I go, I'll think of a lot of things I could have brought out that I haven't, but I think each day was a challenge. You never knew what you're going. You were always anxious to go to work. You know, I think that was a job where you were anxious to get to work because you never knew what was coming, what the next call was going to be.
Which said that being a telephone operator was a pretty rewarding career.
Well, I think so. I always felt it was.